Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and today we're going to talk about diagnostic tooling inside Visual Studio 2015. And I'm joined by three people who are brand new to the show. Welcome, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We've got Dan and Charles and Angelos. And since you're brand new to the audience, I'll let you introduce yourselves.
Sure. So we are three PMs from the Visual Studio Diagnostics team. Charles and I spend a lot of time working on the performance tools in Visual Studio, and Angelos is the guy for IntelliTrace. So we're here to show you what's new.
There have been, you guys have done a lot of work in 2013, continuing to do more work in 2015. Give us a quick overview of kind of your goals. Are the tooling addressing new issues? Is it just it was time to do better tools? What's kind of the high level guidance?
Yeah, so we've been, in 2013, we did quite a bit of work on our profiling tools in Visual Studio. We essentially went from, you know, here to here, right? So we've added so many tools in Visual Studio 2013 and the updates. And the big shift that we're making in 2015, and I'll go ahead and press F5 just to show you what I mean, is that we're bringing the diagnostic tools into the debugging experience, right? So that you can get more value out of the tools as a regular part of every day. F5, stepping through
and
code.
How much of this was driven by the need for better diagnostic tooling in mobile apps, Windows 8 apps, Windows Phone apps, and how much of it is just everybody wants better diagnostic tooling regardless of what you're building?
Well, so one of the big pieces of feedback we got about the profiling tools is like, hey, these tools are great, you guys are making great progress, but one of the challenges is that developers, first of all, don't know they exist because it's the separate set of tools here in the Analyze menu that you have to go run, and it's sort of outside of your everyday workflow. and also just want to have that constant reminder that the performance is there, and if you see something while you're developing, you can quickly look at the diagnostic tools and take a look and sort of...
So to make it more part of the debugging process, it's not something you do, you debug your code, make sure the code works, and then you go check performance.
Right.
Now it's just something that you do as part of the normal workflow.
Right, you keep That's an cool. eye on your performance while you're debugging. It sort of reduces the barrier, makes it easier for you to do that check and sort of don't put it off until later.
Right. One last thing to forget, one last thing to run out of time to do.
Exactly. Yep. I also want to highlight that the other major thing we've done with the diagnostic tools experience is that we've completely revamped the IntelliTrace UI, which Angelos will show us.
Okay.
The IntelliTrace UI was a little bit unintuitive and difficult to use, and we've brought it all together into the diagnostic tools window with the performance tools so that we have one really easy to use experience for all of these sort of historical over time tools.
All right. Excellent.
Right. So with that, I'd like Angelos to come up and go ahead and show us what we've done with IntelliTrace in this release, and then we'll follow up afterwards with the performance.
And we're using 2015 CTP 5.
Yeah. So this is the CTP 5 release that you can go and download Visual Studio's website today.
Right.
And we'll be continuing to release new CTPs, which have even better versions of these tools as we keep refining and improving.
Okay. So if you're using the 2015 preview and you see something that isn't in your build, that's why.
Exactly.
That's right. All right.
All right.
Excellent.
Let's take it away, Angelos.
Angelos.
So what we're going to do here is we're going to debug a real application, and we're going to try and fix a real bug using IntelliTrace.
Cool.
This is the new experience in 2015. So for the first part of the demo, I'm going to go rather quickly through the UI and actually make use of the tool to fix the bug. And then I'm going to take some time to walk you through the actual new UI and talk about each of the elements. So what I have here is a very simple text editor written in WPF. And all it lets you do is open a file, make some changes, and save it. So I'm going to go ahead and do just that. I'll click the Open button. I'm going to pick a file. The contents don't really matter. So I'm just going to scroll to the bottom, and I'm going to make some edits. Now, when I click Save, what I notice is that my scroll bar went back up to the top, and my mouse position has been lost. It's at the beginning of the file again.
Okay.
So let's say this is the bug I want to fix.
That's a bug?
That is a bug, right? I would hope for the mouse position to stay at the bottom when I was making the edits. So using just a debugger, when I give this as a kind of interactive demo, most people say the first place I would look is the event handler of the save button.
Sure.
That makes sense. That's definitely what I would do too. I can tell you that's not where the bug is. And the reason why I'm telling you this is a simple application. The bug is very simple. And it's kind of obvious that it's probably behind this button. But guess what? Even in those situations, the bug can be hiding somewhere else.
Sure.
So I'm not going to waste my time now setting a breakpoint, repeating these steps, and not getting to the root cause. Instead, what I will do is I'm just going to hit break all. Break all in Visual Studio is the same as making every thread hit a breakpoint. It just stops all threads.
Oh, okay.
And this gives me the ability to look at the data IntelliJ has collected.
Is that new in 2015?
No, that actually has been there for a while. It's just most people don't find a very good
like
use
me.
For it. IntelliJ is a very good
okay.
use for it. So now I'm just going to go through the table of events that IntelliJ has collected,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to try to look for something familiar to me. So the first thing I recognize is the clicked open
yep.
event. This is me just clicking on the open button that showed the open file dialog, and then it opened the file I selected. So it makes sense when I see a file access and a file close event right after it.
Yes.
Because what typically happens is you open the stream, read the contents, close the stream. Therefore,
right.
two events. Then I see my clicked save event.
Mm-hmm.
That's me making the edits, scrolling to the bottom, making the edits, and then clicking save. So again, that's what I expected to see. But then
I see... accessed and closed and accessed and
right.
closed. So I'm going to say that that second access thinks that you opened it for the first time, and when you open something for the first time, it puts the cursor at the very top.
Right? I mean, you already... you don't. You have no idea what the code is.
No, I don't, but
and
that is awesome.
And you just looked at that.
Yeah.
And you already have a much better hypothesis as to where this code, this bug could
cool.
be
we
hiding
did not
in the
rehearse
code.
That, by the way.
Not at all. So even if this is not the root cause of the bug, it's still interesting to look
yes,
into.
Yes, it's unexpected. It's
exactly.
It's telling me that that would be a place to look.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to be fair, if you get a really good logging framework and you put lots of trace messages, you can get something
sure.
similar
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
this. It's not going to be integrated, but it gets you the same kind of information. What I'm really interested now is why do I get these two extra events that I don't expect?
Right.
If I was using just a logging framework, I'm kind of out of luck. I have to go to the code, put some breakpoints in various places
mm-hmm.
where there is a file access, and then repeat my testing steps. Instead, what I can do with IntelliTrace is I can just ask it. So if I select the first file access event, and I click Activate Historical Debugging, so clicking Activate Historical Debugging makes my code editor take me to the line of code
mm-hmm.
that is responsible for generating this event.
Okay.
So here we are in the button save file underscore click, which is the event handler for the save button. So
right.
this is expected. This is a using statement where it opens up the file to do the writing. So there's nothing here that I'm suspicious about. This looks normal. I'm assuming the close event is just going to point me to the end of the using statement where the stream is going to be closed. So I'm not going to bother with that. Instead, I'm going to go where we both decided that the interesting event is the second file access.
Right.
So I'm going to select that one, and I'm going to click Activate Historical Debugging. Now this time, my code editor, like you suspected before, is in the read file method.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of makes sense if everything gets reset if I reopen the file. But what I don't know right now is why is it getting called?
Right.
It makes no sense to me to click save and then call read file. So what I need here is help from IntelliTrace.
Probably with enough breakpoints and enough stepping,
right.
probably could have got to this point.
Yes.
But it was way faster looking at it here.
Right. And this is a very simple application.
Mm-hmm.
Reproducing the issue only takes a few seconds. So
yes.
you don't mind watching me do it over and over again.
Right.
But if this was more difficult to reproduce or the application was just more complex
mm-hmm.
and it was much more difficult to put breakpoints, you can see how it might take you a little while
yes.
before you get to the exact same
right.
place that IntelliJ
yeah.
took you
here
very
you
quickly.
Just go to the code that caused that.
That's right.
Right.
So the final piece of the puzzle is why is this getting called?
Mm-hmm.
And IntelliJ can help me by showing me historical call stack information. So if I just pin the call stack window, you can see that the title of the window has actually changed to say historical debugging.
Mm-hmm.
This is showing you the call stack as it was at that point in time when that line of code was executed. So this can help me answer the question, why does it get executed? Looking at the frames in the stack, I see there is a open file method getting called. Still not sure why open file would get called. Looking before it, it looks like open file gets called by on file changed.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like we're picking up some file changes and we're resulting in opening the file, but I'm sure still not sure why. And then there is an anonymous method that is kind of hitting the whole thing. So I'll just go to that method, see what this is all about. And here I can see that this is a event handler for a file system watcher object.
Okay.
This is actually part of the application's functionality. If I open up a file and somebody else edits the same file and they save their changes, the application shows me a message saying, hey, if you save now, you're going to lose changes that somebody else has made, so be careful.
So when you save the file, you're triggering the file watcher changed, which thinks that somebody else changed the file, doesn't understand that it was you that just changed the file working on, and says, hey, somebody randomly changed the file. On file change gets triggered, which then reopens it.
Exactly. So it looks like I have a little bug here that it doesn't filter out changes that are coming from my own edits. So this is a demo, so it's as simple as uncommenting something. But just to prove the point that if I click continue and I get my application to continue running, I can just scroll to the bottom again, type something in, and click save, and my bug is fixed.
Right, cool.
So what I wanted to demonstrate is that with IntelliTrace, you can get to the root cause of the bug quicker, even if you don't know the code.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went really quickly through the UI, actually making use of it to fix the bug. What I want to show you now is the things that I didn't use.
So just to review, what parts of what you just showed are new in 2015? Because IntelliTrace has been in there for a while.
That's right. So IntelliTrace used to be a tool window that was in the same space as Solution Explorer. It was just an extra tab that you could click to. And it used to be this same list of events, only they were in a flat list format rather than a tabular format.
Okay.
So the list of events is the same, only the tabular format is giving you access to more data at a glance, such as the time of the event and the duration. And it's also giving you the name of the thread that was responsible for generating the event.
Okay, so some new features and also, most importantly, way easier to use because it's
right
there.
What is completely brand new is the integration with the diagnostics tools window and the representation of all this data into a timeline.
Okay.
So what you're seeing up here, this is something I didn't use in this particular scenario, but it's actually the same data, the same events being represented as a timeline. And what we're doing here is, and let me zoom out a little bit, is we're splitting up the events into three tracks. The first track gives you all the break events.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the debugger hitting a breakpoint, or you doing a step, or us clicking the break all button. Every time you do anything like that, you'll get a little event into this track. Then you have the output events track.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that goes to the output window, IntelliTrace collects and puts it on the timeline so you can see how they relate to other things that your application is doing. And finally, you have the IntelliTrace events track.
Mm-hmm.
That's where every other event that is collected goes. And the nice thing about the timeline is it gives you an eagle-eye view as to what your application is doing. And then if you spot something that is weird or unexpected or a cluster of events that you want to get more information about, you can simply use time selection, which filters the table accordingly, and you can also zoom to selection to get a more detailed view. And you can keep doing this as you get closer and closer to the root cause of an issue.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Excellent.
So with that, I'm going to ask Dan to come back and show you guys how PerfTips works and how it actually integrates with this experience very well.
Cool. Excellent. Right. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Angelos, for setting the stage there. So I'm going to switch to a different application that I'm going to use to demo some of the performance tooling features.
This is one of my favorite features so far in the product.
The PerfTips features?
Yes.
Yes, I'm glad you like it. Okay, so I'm going to start by setting up this application. It's called PhotoFilter, and it just downloads some pictures from the cloud and then loads some pictures from your disk. And when I press F5, I notice that it takes a long time for the application to start up and for the pictures to be displayed. And we'll see here it probably takes about 10 or 12 seconds or so.
Right.
And this is one of those cases that as a developer, I might just sort of live with it and say, hey, I'll go later run the profile.
Your users aren't going to, though.
Yeah, exactly. But and then I might say, oh, I need to go check that box and run the profiler later and figure out what's going on. Also, commonly, what a lot of people do in this situation is they just set a breakpoint and start stepping through the code and just trying to figure out what's going on. Right, so I'm going to go ahead and do that, and we're going to see what happens. So when I press F5 and I hit my first breakpoint, I set it in the load images function because you know, I have a hypothesis. It was, took a long time for the pictures to load. I'm going to go inspect the load images function.
Sure.
Right? It's pretty natural.
Yep.
So I step over that, and I'm going to zoom into the editor a bit so you can see this. But you'll notice right away that this is what we call the debugger perf tips.
Yeah.
Right? So this is sort of the in-editor heads-up view of your performance information right here. And this is telling me that the previous line took up to 3 milliseconds to run.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're running with the debugger, and there is some debug overhead.
Sure.
Right? So this is telling me that...
But still, that's pretty that's pretty quick.
Yep. It says this previous line.
Yep.
It's not that interesting. Right? So we can use this to sort of strike out sections of code one at a time. And so instead of just guessing by looking at what the code does, now we've got some performance information that we can use to guide our investigation. All right, so I'm going to go back here to... Okay, so as I step through each line one at a time, I'll say, okay, that was quick, get images from cloud. And we see it taking a long time, so we know right away that this method was interesting.
But not as much, so that's almost 3 seconds, which is a little bit... Probably, we might want to see if we can figure that out, but we just now know definitively that that's only part of the problem.
Right, right. And we have a number, too, is the big thing, right? We don't have to sort of mentally count in our heads or write these things down. And now when I step over loading images from disk, I can see that that is a further 3.7 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link query here that it takes a little while to run, actually surprisingly long to run in this case. That one took 6 seconds.
Okay.
Right? And then the remaining two, we'll see that they complete quickly. Now, the neat thing is that if you click on the perf tip, it will actually bring the diagnostic tools window up if it's not up already.
Okay.
And the reason for that, and this is something new that we introduced in CTP 5, because perf tips have actually been out for a while.
Because when I showed this in preview, that didn't happen.
Right.
You got a dialog that gave you the ability to get the CPU time as well.
Right. So this has actually been our long-term vision with it, that the perf tips actually bring the diagnostic tools up for you so you can sort of get a closer look. And the main thing, and Angelos was just showing us the break event track. The break event track actually provides you that visual history of all those perf tip values. So if I hover here, I can see that this is that this step here was 5.8 seconds if you look at the tooltip.
I was about to ask you if you just record things. So can you just run the method without stepping through it and record how long each line takes?
Because we don't want to slow down debugging, we actually do it whenever you interact with the debugger. So it's sort of a guided performance measurement. But we do record, and you could set some trace points and see their timing information. I'll get to that in a second. But the main point is that you don't need to write it down. It's right here in this visual history here. And you can also filter the table below to only show debugger events. So now I have the duration. Now I have in a tabular format that history of the data here.
Oh, there it is. Okay, cool.
So it is user guided because you had to set those breakpoints in step, right? And then you can activate historical debugging to see which lines each thing happened on if you want to go back and refer to it, but it does have the line number there. but in our case, this one right here corresponded to that getting images from cloud method, that first one we ran over. And and when I select this, I can actually scroll down and see the CPU and memory characteristics of that action, right? So right here I can see that there was a bunch of CPU at the start of that step, and then it went sort of quiet for a little while.
Right.
So this tells me that there's probably a bit of network I/O involved. It's not using the CPU. Maybe I can go ahead and parallelize some network calls or something like that. But let's go back in and step through the get images from cloud method, take a look. So I'm going to show a few more features of perf tips while I do this. So if I run to that get images from cloud method there, I'll step in. And we'll see that this method is divided into primarily two main functions. And these are just sections of code that are in, you know, this is just what's written. The first section goes ahead and gets a list of images from the server. And then the second section of code downloads each image one at a time. So I can go and I can actually put a breakpoint here and see how long does it take to run that first section of code. I press F5, I run to that line. This is actually taking longer than it normally does. Might be an issue here. I actually happen to know that it usually doesn't take that long. So another good thing to do with performance is to run things a few times to see if you get consistent results.
Yep.
So I'm just going to set the breakpoints at the start and end of that and try it again. So I hit the first breakpoint, press F5. There we go. So we see that first section of code took 922 milliseconds. Maybe it hit a bit of a network glitch, so
not
it took longer that one
bad.
Time.
Yep.
Right? And then I want to see what happens when I do this last piece of code here. And if I right-click and I run to cursor, I can see that ran in about 1.5 seconds.
Okay.
Actually, I made a mistake here. I've left the optimized version of the code in.
You did?
Yes. And so I'm going to these is actually downloading the pictures, all three in parallel.
Oh, okay.
So what I can do is I can run this again and show you how long it takes when I remove that optimization.
All right.
Sound fair?
Sure.
All right. So I've got, I'm just going to comment out the parallel code here, and I'm going to make it run where I download one pictures one at a time.
Okay.
Right. So instead of, it was actually creating a list of tasks and then downloading all in parallel.
I see.
And so what I'm showing you here is that I can run experiments on my code very, very cheaply and just say, is it faster when I do this or that?
Yep.
And so I'm just going to go ahead and time the difference there. That was about 1.5 seconds when I ran that last piece. I'm going to use run to cursor again just to get right to this first line. And so what run to cursor does is it runs the debugger until it hits that line of code. And then I'm going to say run to cursor again. There's a shortcut key, Control F10.
Yep.
And we'll see that the serial version takes about 4.6 seconds.
Okay.
So if I had gone the other way around, I would have sped this up by about 3 seconds.
Sure.
Yeah. And the neat thing with run to cursor is instead of having to set breakpoints, if you're just doing a one-off measurement, I can just press Control F10, Control F10, Control F10, measure from here to here to here to here.
Right. Cool.
So that's all I was going to show on CPU and the perf tips.
Excellent.
And Charles can actually dig a little bit more into the memory aspects of these tools for us.
Cool. Nope.
All right. Thank you. And here's Charles.
Great.
All right. Top that, if you will.
Sure. Well, I am going to demonstrate the new memory usage tool that runs while debugging using the same app that that Dan was just demoing for us here. The photo filter. Just to sort of refresh, on the left I've got a virtualized list of thumbnails and then one big image in the middle. And so I have an expectation that I am going to be pretty judicious in my memory use as the application starts up.
Okay.
Because the virtualized list should load the data that I need as it needs it and not all at once. However, I saw something while we were doing the demo that made me think that is not what's happening. And I saw that in the new memory usage graph. That's part of the diagnostic tools window. So if we just watch here, I can collapse debugger events because that's not all that I'm interested in. Right here, this run up in memory, this is a concern for me. So this is something I want to investigate. I know this is part of my startup path, and once again, we're loading images, so it's probably a good bet to start back at our load images method right here. One of my favorite things about bringing the memory usage tool into the debugger is the fact that I can use the debugger to help control the investigation.
Right.
I don't have to try to guess where it is I need to look. I can use breakpoints, and I can use stepping. To really, really get finer grained control. So I'm just going to step through this one by one, and I'm going to watch the memory graph here and just see what happens. Not much. Let that run. Complete the step. All right. We used a bit more there. We're at 25. And then right here, when I stepped over load images from disk. That's the spike that I saw before.
Okay.
So I've now narrowed this down that the big part of my memory problem is this guy right here, load images from disk. The memory usage tool is snapshot, moment in time based. So I do need to decide that at this point in time is where I want to look at the heap, and the snapshots will allow me to investigate all the types that were live on the heap at the time I took the snapshot. So I'm just going to set my breakpoint there, restart debugging one more time, so that I can set a good baseline right before load images from disk runs, and then take another snapshot right after. All right, great. So here in the memory usage tab, really easy, I just take a snapshot. And then I'm going to step. And then I'm going to take another snapshot.
And then you're going to compare the two snapshots to see what is eating up the additional memory.
Exactly.
You've narrowed it down to the line of code, but you still need to know what's going on.
Correct. Okay. And we get a high-level overview on the snapshot tiles. Yep. You can see we've got the bytes that are live on the heap, the number of objects that are live on the heap, and subsequent snapshots will show me the diff in size and objects. So clicking one of these links will actually take me into the heap view. I'm just going to move this over here so I have a little more room to look at it. Now in the heap view, we see all of the types that were live on the managed heap at the time I took the snapshot. We do have just my code on right now. I can resize all the columns, and more importantly, I can sort the columns. So I'm going to sort by count diff. I've got a lot of framework types that my photo filter types are referencing. But right here, towards the top of the list, photofilter.imageItem, this is probably one that I want to investigate because it's a type that's actually in my project.
Okay.
Now down in the bottom pane, I have the references graph, which shows the types that are being retained by ImageItem in reference types, and then the types that are being retained that are retaining ImageItem, which is paths to root. So I'm going to start in reference types, and we can see here we've got four types. Now, based on the count diff and the total size, if I was investigating this, I might think that string is likely to be my problem. It's got the biggest amount, but those 52,000 bytes don't nearly account for all of what I saw. And knowing that some types, like bitmap image, are not just managed objects, they decode their data on the native heap, that, in the current version of the tool, gets masked from you. So I am going to go, based on what I know with bitmap image, and think that might be a good place to start, especially since it's an image. An image filtering app. From here, I can go to definition or find all references. So I'm going to go to definition for my type. Bitmap image right here is the one I want. So I'm going to see how was this field used. And it looks like we've got two places. One inside this photo property, which loads the actual image on demand when the property is called. And then here in load image from disk, which is on our startup path, and it looks like the intent was to preload all of the images, which would explain perhaps the run-up in memory that we saw on the graph. So then we have to decide, do we want to preload them all, or do we want to be more conservative with our memory use? I am going to opt for more conservative memory use here. And I'm just going to comment out these two lines, and if I've understood everything correctly, the photo should still load just fine, but now the memory use is going to be a lot more judicious. So leaving this...
It takes each photo a little bit longer to load, though? Is that a trade-off that we're making here?
Potentially. And generally, when you are looking at performance issues, there's usually a trade-off.
Right.
Do you need to optimize for a low-memory device, or do you need to optimize for speed? Yep. What sort of characteristics is it that you're looking for? And then there's always the question of, it might take a little bit longer to load, but is the user actually going to notice that it took longer?
Right.
So it's something worth investigating. I'm going to leave my same breakpoint in place, and I'm just going to confirm that I have, in fact, solved that spike that worried me. We'll hit the breakpoint. Okay, and you can, repeat your steps, take one more step, and I can immediately see that the spike at the same point in code is so much
less.
Smaller.
Yep.
So the virtualized list, we gave it a chance to do its work, and our memory use, it looks like that problem at least is solved.
Yep, very cool.
Great.
Cool, awesome, great stuff.
Thanks.
A couple of other things, neat things there. You'll notice that the perf-tit number for that line of code went down as well because we're doing less image loading on the startup path.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Cool. You can come back on.
Yeah. Oh, I should mention, the memory usage tool does work for managed and native, and certain flavors of mixed mode as well.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool stuff. Yep. So, again, this is stuff that is in the current CTP. Mm-hmm. So between now and release, are there any things you can share with us in terms of things we might expect to get between now and then, or things that might be on your list of things that you might wind up putting into updates? And if the answer is no, that's fine, but.
Nothing we can share now, but we're, you know, okay. We're just continuing to work on improving this and adding as much as we can.
All right, high level general direction in the future, where might we see this stuff go?
Just easier to use. We just made it so that all you have to do is press F5.
Okay.
That's what we want to try and do, create more experiences that they don't need you to configure settings, go through a different workflow than what you're used to.
Right.
We want to make all the tools available to you immediately.
So just make it part of what you do and not this separate thing that you have to go remember and do and kind of learn how to use.
That's right. You might see more deeper integration with more of the debugging experience in the future. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of people ask for more information in the perf tips, or if you've looked at the new breakpoint settings dialog, some people have asked for more performance-related actions in there. Mm-hmm. It's all stuff we're thinking about, but we can't make any promises at this point in time.
Okay.
We'll do whatever we can to make this stuff really work for our users.
All right. Yeah. Cool. This is awesome stuff. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Hope you like that. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.